technology is so important to be successful in sales right now. But what I think we forget is all of that technology will eventually get you in front of somebody where you have a conversation with them. If you can't win that conversation, if you can't engage somebody on a human level, everything up to that point has been for naught.
Welcome to Outside Sales Talk, where we meet with industry experts to learn the strategies and tactics that make them successful. I'm your host, Steve Benson, and I've helped thousands of salespeople all over the world crush their quota. Today, I'll help you crush yours.
Welcome back to Outside Sales Talk. Today, we're learning about how to become hyper-connected in outside sales. I've got David Fisher here on the show to tell us all about it. He goes by D. Fish. He's a sales expert, professional keynote speaker, and best-selling author. Wrote the book Hyper-Connected Selling, Winning Business Through Personal Influence and Human Connection. Welcome to the show, D. Fish.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So first, let's jump into it. What is hyper-connected selling?
Well, I wrote a whole book on it, so we can just have people read that.
That's the easy way.
Yeah, that's the easy way. Hyper-connected selling, I'm really looking at a sales landscape where the abundance of information and the easy access to information has really put the control back in the hands of the buyer. And the way that we engage as sellers with our buyers, with our prospects, with our clients, has to change because of that. And so we have to figure out how to really bring value in a different way, as opposed to even just 10 or 20 years ago, when it was really just about pounding the phones, knocking on doors, just getting in front of people to get sales. Not that selling is easier or harder now. It's just different.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So how can outside salespeople use hyper-connected selling?
Well, so one of the things that I really look at in hyper-connected selling is this idea of being a sales Sherpa. And I mentioned before that information is now in the hands of our buyers. So it used to be that as sellers, and definitely as outside sellers, we were really excited to stop by and drop off the brochure, right? Or, you know, here's the new specs on this, on the new line or whatever it might be. And the reality is our customers have that. They can go to their phone even, pull up a blog, pull up a website, a white paper. They have that information. What our role really is, I feel, in the sales process now is to, as I said, be a sales Sherpa, be a guide that helps the prospective client or even existing client make better decisions by processing all of that information more easily, more effectively, more efficiently, so that they can solve the pain that they're in, right? So it's not about dropping off the brochure. It's going, hey, I know you have all this information. Let me help you make a better buying decision, because you might not be an expert in buying this product, this service, but I am. Let me help you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Good. Well, I know from your book, a part of that is being assertive versus aggressive as a salesperson. Can you explain the difference between being an assertive salesperson and an aggressive salesperson?
Yeah. And this is, I think, really interesting, because we're seeing maybe there's always been a backlash against salespeople, right? About being pushy and aggressive. And, you know, there's this kind of stigma attached to it. I think we're finally getting to the point where people are really just fed up, right? With salespeople and that aggressiveness. When you look back 10, 20, 30 years ago, to be successful in sales, it actually did require being aggressive. It was a full contact sport, right? Because there was a good chance that a customer did not have the information, and the only thing between them and the buying decision was getting them that information. So, hey, if I keep calling, I use the example of the old Brian Tracy script, which I'm sure if you've been in sales long enough, you might have had the audio tapes of Brian Tracy teaching you how to sell. And there was the old sales approach. Hey, if I can show you a way to save 15% on your XYZ cost, can I have 20 minutes of your time? And that approach, when you really look at it, assumes that the person doesn't have a critical piece of information that you're going to share.
Right.
And so you had to be aggressive. Hustle and grind, hustle and grind. that doesn't work anymore these days. And that doesn't mean that you can be lazy. I think you actually have to work harder. But being assertive is actually putting yourself out there, building up relationships with prospective clients, so that when they are ready to make a purchasing decision, when they are ready to move forward, you're the resource they go to. I'm sure you've seen statistics, your listeners have seen statistics about how much of the purchasing decision is made before they even engage with a salesperson. And it could be anywhere from 50 to 80%. They talk about how there's more people than ever, especially in B2B sales, involved in a buying decision. I think the average is 7 right now. So to think that the only thing you need to do to be successful is just knock on the right door at the right time, you're trying to get lucky. Instead, you can be assertive, which is, I'm going to continue to build a relationship. I've got confidence in my product, my service, myself, my ability to provide value, and I'm going to position myself as the go-to resource, as the expert, so that when they are ready to really move from maybe the research portion of their buying decision into the, hey, let's talk to some salespeople, you're the person that they actually, that they reach out to, that they trust.
That makes a ton of sense. How do you recommend that outside salespeople do that? How do they position themselves as the go-to resource for their customers?
Right. There's a lot of different ways to do it. I think this is where we really can look at the overlap of the offline relationship building and the online relationship building. You know, I'm a huge fan of digital technology, things like LinkedIn or some of the other, and there's so many different sales tools available. I think it's using a lot of the tools we have to create more points of contact with our prospects, with our customers, with our sphere of influence. And it depends a little bit on the industry you're in, of course, but looking at not only starting the conversation, because I think this is what salespeople do really well. They reach out to people, they're at a conference, they're just in an office park, whatever might be there, they start those conversations. It's about finding ways to continue the conversation long term. I personally think that transactional sales is going away. Not because transactions are going away, but if what you're selling is truly transactional, I can get a bot to do it better, right? If I can outsource what you sell, I mean, there's no TV salesman really anymore. Why? Because I can buy a TV on Amazon and get all the information I need, make a pretty good purchasing decision. But most of us sell a product or service that has some complexity, some nuance to it. And so those are going to be about relationships and about trust. And so anything you can do to create that trust between you and your prospect, again, whether it's offline, having human face-to-face interactions, using tools like LinkedIn or Twitter or any social media platform, using drip campaigns, if you have marketing automation, but really using those to just stay in front of your customers, provide them insights as opposed to information. And what I mean by insights is, here's ways to interpret the information you have that will help you make a better decision. And if you do that over and over again, that's how you stay on their radar. That's how you become that go-to person. And it's tough because a lot of us, especially in outside sales, we like to have that direct feedback, right? I did X, I got Y back. A lot of this is seed planting, it's cultivation. It's again, building the relationship, building that know, like, and trust, that old school concept, which is still so valuable. We just have some new contexts and some new venues with which we can build that know, like, and trust.
You talk a lot about H2H selling. Mm-hmm. What is H2H selling and why should outside salespeople embrace it?
So H2H, human to human sales. And I have no idea where I first ran across that. So many of us are talking about it these days. I don't know who coined that term. But, we think about B2C sales and we think about B2B sales. I got my start in outside sales sitting across the kitchen table from Mr. and Mrs. Jones. I was a knife salesman to pay my way through school. And you're like, well, that's B2C. But the reality is the decisions and the decision-making process that people go through, doesn't matter if you're selling a set of kitchen knives, you're selling industrial parts for a factory, if you're selling med tech, it really is about being able to address that human being address their needs, address their personal pain points to help move the conversation forward. And I think that's something that's not really talked about a lot these days because of technology, right? If you look at, you know, kind of the chatter out there in the sales world, it's all about AI and CRM and marketing automation and, you know, drip campaigns and all of these really amazing tools. Like, technology is so important to be successful in sales right now. But what I think we forget is all of that technology will eventually get you in front of somebody where you have a conversation with them. If you can't win that conversation, if you can't engage somebody on a human level, everything up to that point has been for naught, mm-hmm. right? So that's what I mean by really focusing on that human to human aspect. And I think moving forward, as technology does even take some of the more routine tasks of the sales role away, our value as salespeople, not just for our prospects and customers, but for our employers, for our companies, is to bring in these human to human elements that can't be replicated by technology. Empathy, trust building, rapport building, creativity and solution design. You know, the old school idea of consultative selling, I don't think has gone away. I think it's more important than ever. So that's what I mean by H2H sales.
Well, maybe we should dive in there a little bit. Let's talk about a bit about how a salesperson can develop those key skills that make up H2H sales. Like, how can a salesperson develop their well, first, what did you say? Empathy. What were those?
Empathy, trust building, rapport building, relationship building, creativity, critical thinking. It's really interesting. At the end of 2018, LinkedIn put out an emerging jobs report, right, where they went through all of their data and they're like, here's the most opportunities for hiring, meaning employers are looking for these kinds of people, and here's the skills they're looking for. Mm-hmm. Out of the top 10 types of jobs, 6 of the 10 could be construed as some sort of sales job, right? So sales jobs aren't going away.
Right.
And I think it was 6 or 7 of the top 10 sales skills were not technical skills. They were, and I hate the term soft skills, but they were communication, collaboration, leadership, they weren't coding. They weren't how to develop an engineering solution. They were how to deal with people. And I think the first way you develop these skills is you value them, right? You not only for the individual producer. So if you're out there, you know, if you're right now driving around in your car, like, you have to understand that your ability to connect with your prospects and clients is a differentiator, right? It's going to keep you employed. And also, if you're in sales leadership, if you're in training, managing, hiring salespeople, it's not just about looking at, oh, do they have some technical skills? It's, can we put them in front of our prospects and customers? Can they actually engage the right way and move relationships forward? So I think that shift in and of itself is a big one, right? And we used to even just go, hey, all I want is an aggressive guy who can knock on a bunch of doors and take the rejection and just keep going forward. That's not unimportant, right? We're still going to face rejection. We still have to be able to ask for the business. We have to do those things that can be challenging emotionally. But I think that beyond that, you know, empathy is a great place to start. Just the power of learning to listen to people. And you hear this all the time, but it's amazing that because you hear it all the time because nobody does it, even though they know they should.
Right. Absolutely.
But in my career, I mean, it's amazing as a sales manager how many times I've watched salespeople not get sales because the prospect is telling them, this is what I want. If you can do this, I will buy. But yeah, the salesperson's so busy with their deck or so busy with what they want to say.
I see that all the time. If you're training a sales team, or if you were a sales leader, how would you work to build those empathy skills, that ability to see things from the customer's perspective? How do you teach the rep to listen and think about things from the customer's perspective? Are there drills? Is there a book? What do you recommend?
Yeah, so a couple things. There are drills for sure. I think what's really powerful, if the sales manager or sales coach can't be there to actually debrief after no sales, especially, or some negative outcome. And to, instead of just going, well, why did they not move forward? Really diving into getting an answer, because most salespeople say, well, I don't know. If you say no, you have to come to me with the reason why. It's a little exercise, but it's really powerful, because then the salesperson is looking for those signals. They're looking for those cues.
Yeah. I love to ask reps, on my team, well, if something doesn't go right, well, or even if things just haven't gone right yet, a sales cycle's still on. I love to ask, what do you think the customer really wants? And if they haven't gotten us yet, or if they're not going to get us, what did they want? What was the business driver? What was the need? Why were they talking to us?
Yeah. Empathy at its core is just being able to understand the point of view of another person. It's not sympathy. It's not being like, I have to agree with them or feel their pain or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it's really just going, I understand the world from their perspective. So that question is awesome.
Yeah.
And so even just coaching people and asking that follow-up, it forces sales reps to start looking for that. I'm trying to say three things at once. A couple of good exercises. There's a lot of great mindfulness exercises that are coming out right now. And that might sound like, what does it have to do with empathy? A lot of empathy is actually about slowing down. It's about awareness of the other person and about yourself. And there's a lot of great stuff, even just like popping on Headspace or Insight Timer. These are some great meditation apps. 5 minutes in the morning. And instead of going, oh, that's kind of weird and woo-woo, it's like, no, this is a power tool.
Yeah.
Google, I know, had, and I forget the name of it, but they spun out like a whole institute on mindfulness. Maybe it works, right? So those are a couple of easy ways to dive into getting people to recognize what that prospect, what that customer is thinking. Or even doing exercises as a group and going, let's say you're going after an account, you're doing more ABM accounts, account-based management sales. You're going, let's dive into figuring out what's the real problem of our prospects. Like, let's try to brainstorm that before we ever talk to them. And then maybe even finding out if we're right. One tool I use a lot and I teach a lot is called the next question. And it's actually a really cool party trick. It's great if you ever want to go to a place you don't know anybody and make friends. And it's a really simple cycle. You ask a question that's open-ended. Hey, where'd you go to school? And you say, we had this conversation, University of Wisconsin, Madison. Human instinct would be for me to go, oh, I go to Northwestern, right? And then we stop the conversation. There's just two statements. There's nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. If I instead pause and go, well, that's really interesting. What did you study? Or why did you go there? Or how did you like your experience? All mm-hmm. of a sudden, you're asking the next question. They tell you some more. You can ask another question based on that.
Right.
And 5 minutes later, we actually have a connection, right? It's not, oh, I asked you this question about your past because my sales manager said I have to build rapport.
Mm-hmm.
It's, wow, I'm actually finding out a lot about you.
Yeah, well, and I guess this is where empathy really bleeds over into trust building and rapport, right? You're trying to see the world from their perspective to have empathy with them and understand what's driving them. But then in the process of that, from going deeper and deeper, now you've had a conversation, now you've built trust, rapport, relationship building. Yep. These things definitely spill over onto one another.
100%. I think that's actually one of the challenges that we have, especially when we look at organizationally training on these skills, because it's hard to just check the box, right? Oh, I did the empathy training. You know, I did the rapport building training. Everybody's great. But they absolutely bleed over and integrate with each other. But what's really interesting is if you look at any top sales performer in any type of organization, they have these skills in spades, right? We often don't talk about it because it is kind of sometimes a little, not harder to train, but it's harder to quantify.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly it. It's hard to measure. And so it's, modern management loves things that you can measure.
Right.
And it's like, this guy's sales calls take a long time. Is he or she, are they wasting time on the phone? Maybe, or maybe they're building empathy or developing, you know, building rapport, or building trust, building out that relationship, getting, you know, being empathetic to the customer situation. And you can kind of tell when you ask a rep, I mean, your best reps, if you're like, hey, what's important to this customer? What's their business? What are their business problems? when you're talking to a rep about a you know, a sales situation, the best reps are like, oh, this is their problem. This is the key metric they're trying to improve upon, or this is the challenge their business is facing, and mm-hmm. this is what their business is, and this is what they care about. And your worst rep's like, I don't know, I told them about our product.
Well, and what the best salespeople do is they answer all of those things, but then they also can say, you know, their boss is really breathing down their neck. They're actually worried about their job, or one of their peers made a decision and got canned. So I know they're going to be afraid to move off the status quo. It's not even just these superficial answers they're getting, which are valuable, but it's really that's when you talk about empathy and go, oh, mm-hmm. I know why this person is really going to make a decision one way or the other. And that the ability to get that information, again, it's hard to quantify sometimes, but it's super, super valuable. And we were even talking about some of the other ones, you know, rapport building, obviously, trust, creativity, which is this topic I love talking about in sales, because salespeople don't think of themselves as creative people, like, because we think creative is an artist, a musician.
Sure.
But really, because customers have such access to information, but they don't, that doesn't mean that they're better decision makers. In fact, the research shows that the more information you have on a decision, the worse decision you'll probably make.
Is that true?
100%.
That's fantastic.
It's fascinating. I unfortunately don't have the studies at my fingertips. One of the ones that we've actually all experienced, and we would know this, think about a really a busy day at the office. We've had to do some like really kind of high level cognition. And you go home, and your significant other, your spouse, whatever, it's like, what do you want for dinner? And you're like, I don't know. I don't care. I can't make that decision. Because you actually run out of glucose. Your brain, the parts of your brain for higher decision-making shut down, and you just start thinking from your reptilian brain because you're exhausted.
That's why the answer is always a burrito.
When in doubt, you can't go wrong with tacos, right? I mean, that, yeah, absolutely.
Every time. I mean, Mexican food wins. I mean, what do you want to eat Mexican food? Why are you even asking?
Right. I like that method. It's like Einstein. I'm going to wear the same clothes every day so I don't have to like waste brain power on it.
I love it.
I'm going to tell my wife, tacos from here on out. I'll tell you how that works.
If you want to know my opinion is tacos.
But yeah, so our customers are overwhelmed. They have so many responsibilities. So if we can go in there and not just say, here's my product, buy it. It's not only uncovering their challenges, asking great questions, building rapport, everything we just talked about, but then, hey, you know, I was talking to this other customer, you know, I sell med tech. I was talking to this other doctor's group, and they actually used the product this way and helped with this kind of patient. And hey, this is how they financed it and got into budget, right? Some of these, that sort of critical thinking, creative skill using, that's how you sell, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you get business to happen. If not, you're just hoping to get lucky. And as I said earlier, I think we got to move away from that. We actually have to be people that provide value, a completely overused term. But for me, value is helping people make the better decisions that will allow them to solve the challenges they have.
Yeah, value is often creative or created. Mm-hmm. It wasn't there before. You gave people knowledge or information, and now they execute on it, and value is created. It wasn't one of the chapters in your books, like sales people are creating.
Yeah, and I think, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of times people say, "Oh, creativity is just the realm of artists and whatnot." But if you think about what sales do, one of my favorite quotes is like, nothing happens until something gets sold, right? I mean, it's what we tell ourselves to feel important, you know, when we're salespeople and we've just gotten, you know, beat down with a bunch of rejection. But in some ways it's true. Everybody at your organization doesn't have a job. They don't get a paycheck unless you bring in revenue to cover that paycheck for everybody. Mm-hmm. So if you think of yourself almost like an entrepreneur, right? You're making something that wasn't there before. Every deal you make, there's nothing. And then you make a deal with somebody and all of a sudden something happens. You know, your products, your service gets sold. That customer can do things. I mean, mm-hmm. that's cool. I mean, that's a really powerful thing.
It's what I've always loved about sales. I mean, people wouldn't buy something from you unless the thing created more value to them than they paid you money. And therefore, as a salesperson, you're literally creating value from, you're creating something from where there was nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I always say, like, with software, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I always say that when you're selling software, for example, the value that you create tends to be around 10x what someone will pay for your software. So like if someone's going to pay you $5,000 a year for a piece of software, then you really are probably going to create like 50 grand a year in value for their business.
Right.
Because at the time of purchase, they had to think that it was going to be worth their time to get off the couch and do something. They had to think that it was going to be worth at least 25 grand to them. So right. It had to be worth 5x more than it cost. And
right.
It ends up being 10x because usually when people buy software, they don't understand everything it does, or like they underestimate, oh, this is, but I don't know if that's a rule in software or just what I've seen over and over again throughout my career.
That's what most rules are, right? Just anecdotes that get codified into a rule.
Yeah, but I love that part about sales. You're literally like going around being a consultant that's a free consultant, and then they pay you, but they end up with way more value. People should love salespeople.
You know what? What's interesting is I think the ones that do it right are loved, right? And it's the ones that do just go and harass and just throw a deck at somebody. Nobody likes those. But the ones who are consultative, and don't get me wrong, I know this sounds like, again, sometimes people are like, oh, it's very woo-woo and like all nice and, you know, tree hugger, and you're just going to build rapport and stuff. In the end, we're still trying to create stuff, right? This takes, it takes more effort, I think, to sell this way, you know, to build value, to really get to know what's going on with your prospects, to be creative, to find solutions. In the end, you still have to ask for the business, right? In the end, your job is to consult. So it's blindingly obvious that there's value here. And then sometimes the value you provide is getting, you know, prospects off their keister, right? Because it is always easier to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That can be the value you provide as well. But and I found that a lot of times really successful salespeople are loved by the people that they sell to because they do 5X, 10X, sometimes a lot more than that. They bring that value.
Yeah. And I always look at it through the lens of, you know, it's often obvious to someone that your product or service creates value. But they have limited time, limited resources. Mm-hmm. There's 50 things on their to-do list, and they would have already done it before they're even talking to you. They would have already done it if they thought this is like the number one thing they should do.
Right.
So as a salesperson, it's your job to my sales team, right? Like like everyone they talk to ever knows that their salespeople would be better with like a map of their territory and the ability to make a route. Right? Like everyone, it's obvious, but but that's not the most important thing to them, or they already would have done it. It's like
right.
number 20 on their list. They're like, yeah, I'm going to do that right after I rework the sales plan and relaunch the CRM's new version and change
yep.
this process and do a training on this. Those are the top five things I'm doing right now. And this is like something I should do after I'm done with that. And as a salesperson, your job is to show them, hey, if you do this now, it's gonna be paying itself back in spades in 3 months. Let me show you why. And here's why you should do this before those other things. Because it's not mm-hmm. even that hard, you know, just like, I'll set you up like this. You don't have to do anything.
Right? So exactly.
That's the salesperson's job. And then you unlock all this value for the customer, and they're, you know, you've created, and in your language, you've created value.
Right. And I think that's where that assertiveness does come in, right? You sometimes need to push a little bit, but I'll go back even to that idea I shared about the sales Sherpa and really kind of becoming known in your circle, becoming the go-to resource. Because maybe it is number 20 on their list, and no matter what you say, they're not going to move it off of number 20 right now. But next quarter, that might jump up, mm-hmm. right? Or all of a sudden that becomes the main thrust, the main initiative of 2020. And so all of a sudden they're in a conference room going, we need a mapping software. Oh, hey, let's call Badger. You know, I know my guy over there keeps saying it's great. Yeah. Right. And that's, so you want to be assertive and persistent now, but again, just get in front of people and stay on their radar, continuing mm-hmm. to share why, hey, maybe now it is time to move forward. Eventually yeah. they'll listen.
And I try, and here's a tip that's worked really well for our organization is to take work off the salesperson's plate. I'll try to move those deals back to marketing. So mm-hmm. I like to have a lead passing system, not just from marketing to sales, but when yep. sales says, you know, I talked to this guy, we're a great fit. I think they'll buy it eventually, but they're not going to look at this for 6 months or a year or whatever it is, or till 2020. I like to have that passed back to marketing to put and to have mm-hmm. to have kind of like an activated drip campaign, sending them useful things, just, you know, being yep. on their radar. And then when they kind of pop back up on the radar, have marketing repass the lead to sales.
Yep.
I don't like to put that responsibility on the sales team, because the marketing team can do it at scale. You know, the marketing team has the capability of being like, oh, okay, you labeled this as someone to drip value to. Great. We got that. That's what we do.
Here's my wrinkle. I think it has to be both. And I think, heck, we could spend another couple hours talking about sales and marketing alignment and why it is so necessary. I love the idea of you actually getting marketing involved again, right? Because a lot of organizations, the salesperson will go, oh, they're not ready for, you know, 6 months or a year, and then it just gets ignored. Mm-hmm. So the idea of passing it back so that you do have the drip campaigns, you're still staying in front of people, I think that's critical. But I don't know if I'd absolve a salesperson of all responsibility.
Yeah, no, I agree. I wasn't saying that.
Yeah.
They should keep whatever cycles they feel is appropriate. It's right. still their deal when the person's ready. It's still their deal.
And it's their relationship, right? And something I think that salespeople forget is building a relationship takes time and shared bandwidth. So even if that salesperson goes, hey, every 2 months, every 3 months, I'm going to reach out and give a quick hello. That's where I think a tool like LinkedIn, let's say, social media, mm-hmm. having great content come from a marketing team, but then having the salesperson be able to come in and pretty regularly either share internal content or even just other stuff in the space, like, hey, here's a great podcast I was listening to in my industry or whatever. That's, again, where you up your credibility so that when the prospect is ready, they've been getting the content from marketing. They've still seen the salesperson. They've had some touch points. It's not almost like a cold-ish phone call again. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, hey, what's up? Oh, Bill, I've been seeing all your stuff, you know, on social. I get stuff from Badger. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, 7 months ago or, you know, last quarter, you're like, it's not right at the right time. I think this is, can we have a conversation? And yeah. you're starting from a much higher point.
I love what you're saying right now. And I know that you talk a ton about sales networks and the importance of it and how to manage it. Mm-hmm. I've read you use the word supercharge. What tips do you have for outside salespeople to supercharge their sales network mm-hmm. and do what you're saying?
Yeah. So a couple really easy things you can do. One is actually look at using some tools like LinkedIn, some of the one-to-many communication avenues. I love LinkedIn for B2B salespeople especially, and this is somewhat industry dependent, but the ability to connect with people. And the biggest thing I tell people as far as networking is concerned, so social media is a great example of this, connect with people, but don't try to sell them right away. This is what we see all the time. Oh, you accepted my LinkedIn connection request. Let me pitch you. You wouldn't do it in real life. Don't do it on social.
So true.
What I really suggest is you want to have a sphere of influence, right? And I call it networking karma. The more you put into it, the more is going to come out. Maybe not from a direct activity that you've done, but from somewhere else. So I think that's a big part of it. The second thing I do suggest is that you plant seeds every week. One of the things that's been really powerful for my sales career is I at least once a week have a cup of coffee or a lunch with somebody either new to my network, or there's people like that I'll meet with every 3 to 6 months. and just kind of chat, catch up. And there's rarely a direct business reason why. But I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and it's amazing to me how much business now comes my way. Not only directly from those conversations, but because I've kept that relationship going, when I find a piece of business that might be great, I can just pick up the phone and be like, hey, can you introduce me to so-and-so? And they're like, yeah, sure, no problem, done. But you've got to expect that you're not going to get something directly back right away. So just having some of those seed planting activities, again, on social, reaching out, going to conferences, going to professional meetings. And this sounds super cheesy, but it works. Looking, how do I give back to the people I'm meeting first? How do I, we've used the word value a lot today, but how do I help them? Are there introductions they're looking for? Are there resources I can suggest to them? Can I just listen? We forget about the power of just sharing time with another human being. Such a powerful thing. But look to do that first, right? Look to give, and then look for ways you can get. So those are just a couple easy ways that, you know, this week, if you start doing some social media activity, even just 10 minutes a day, sharing what marketing's creating for you already, and then, you know, have one lunch or coffee a week, and then find one way to support somebody else just out of the goodness of your heart. You keep doing, start doing that, some really good things will come your way.
Such great advice. Well, the next thing I'd like to do on the show here is do what I call sales in 60 seconds, where I ask shorter questions with shorter answers.
I'll try.
So tell me, what are the most important skills or characteristics an outside salesperson should have?
We talked about a lot of these already, but you know, the old school ideas of resiliency are important, persistence. I think being other-centered is critical, and that's where you tie together all that rapport building, empathy, relationship building, trust. Care about the people that you work with, and you'll be successful. And work. There's no secret to success. Anybody who's telling you there's a secret is trying to sell you something. If you show up, you do the right stuff, and you do it over and over again, and you put the effort and time in. I had a mentor tell me, don't learn the tricks of the trade, just learn the trade. That's it. I mean, I wish I had something super sexy to say, but nope, just do the work.
Yeah. Oh, I've found that overnight success only takes about 15 years.
Right.
So, what should salespeople do when they experience a setback?
Punch a wall, yell at the universe for its unfairness. A very powerful thing that I've learned to do over my career is, I actually have a pretty consistent meditation practice. We were talking about mindfulness before, but finding some way to create self-awareness of what really is happening in that space. Meditation works for me. There's a lot of different ways of going about this, whether it's talking to a sales manager, talking to another person. But the biggest thing I think you can do is get real perspective on what that setback is. As humans, we're wired to think setbacks, our physiology is wired to think it's like really important. You know, we get the fight or flight. Somebody says no to us and like all of a sudden adrenaline and we're just freaked out. And like our lives are fine, right? we're not surgeons. We're not firefighters. Nobody died because of a bad day. And whatever tool you have to create that distance and that non-attachment, man, that's super powerful. As opposed to taking it personal, letting it affect and infect your emotions. That's no good.
What are some don'ts when it comes to networking and sales? What are some things people shouldn't do?
Don't look at people as a transaction. It can be really hard when you got a quota, you've got responsibilities, you're trying to get sales numbers. The stereotype of the salesperson at the conference, at the networking event, passing out business cards, trying to get everybody's business card, move on to the next person, don't look over somebody's shoulder when you're having a conversation with them to see if there's somebody better to talk to or somebody new to talk to. I think that's a big don't. And I think the other thing is treat a human being, hopefully like you'd be like to be treated as a human being. If you're going to reach out to somebody, start a conversation, don't pitch them in 2 seconds. And it's just ridiculous. And we see it all the time and it never works. Don't just hammer people. It wastes a bunch of time and energy on your part as it is, and is rarely successful. So I think, and I guess the third thing, don't expect every activity to have a direct payoff, right? Sometimes they will, and that's great, but there's a lot of investing. I mean, if a farmer expected every seed he planted to be fully realized the next day, we'd all starve.
Mm-hmm.
So understand that a lot of the best long-term benefits are just that, long-term.
What's the greatest sales lesson that you've learned over your career?
The greatest sales lesson I learned is something we've touched on a couple times, which is the idea of listening and paying attention to other people. As I mentioned, I got my start selling knives in people's kitchens, and I was relatively successful when I first got started, you know, because I was a good talker, and everybody said, oh, you're a good talker, you'll be a good salesperson. And I kind of had a rougher patch, and my sales manager, my mentor, still a great friend to this day, went out on my appointment, watched me do a presentation. I didn't sell. Walked out and said, I would have sold to that customer. I'm like, oh no, why would you? He's like, you didn't pay attention to her at all. She gave you this signal, and he was absolutely right. This signal, this signal, this signal. You were just too busy saying what you wanted to say. And that was the day I'm like, okay, I've got to, and it took a while, but I learned to shut up, focus on the other person, and that's made all the difference.
Yeah, I remember one of my early sales managers, when we'd be on a phone call, and I would go to talk, and he would just hold his finger up. 1 minute, 1 minute. You listen. Good. It's hard when you're early, you know, because you practice what to say. It's hard to really keep yourself in the mindset as I am here to listen. What are some things that you think all salespeople should do daily to become more successful?
Great question. First of all, I think if you're in sales, you should be reading every day. It's an old school tip, but it super works. There's so much great information. All the stuff that I know, probably a lot of stuff you know, we got from books, we got from other people. Read or listen to podcasts like you're doing right now, but have some learning component in every single day. You will not make more money than you're worth. And the way you change the what you're worth is change your, I mean, we are in a mental business, right? What you know has a real impact. I think that's really critical. This may sound strange. I think everybody have at least one good meal. And by good, I mean healthy. Our bodies are our engines. If you're not taking care of yourself, it's hard. I mean, definitely have tacos, have some beers. There's nothing wrong with that. But I learned that the hard way. I didn't take care of myself and business suffered. You know, I think I said, if you can plant a seed every day in your relationships, whether that means starting a new one with somebody that might not have is not a prospect, or even just reaching out to somebody who's in your network, saying hi, pinging them, hey, I'm thinking about you, putting out that good chi into the world. A, makes the world a better place. I think we kind of need that right now. But again, whatever you put out into the world comes back to you. It's a very woo-woo thing, but man, I've seen it over and over and over again. So put good stuff out into the world.
Karma.
Yep.
As a final takeaway, what should the field salespeople listening today do as a first step to get started on hyper-connected selling?
Besides do everything we just talked about, right?
Go back and listen to this.
Go back and listen to this again. You know, I think the really step, we talked about planting those seeds. I think it is to actually spend a few minutes writing down what you're good at and what your areas of opportunity are, right? So if you can even just have that initial level of self-awareness, that lets you know what to work on. Because I think a lot of people don't, just like your prospects don't know what they don't know, you as a sales rep, you as a sales leader, probably don't know what you don't know. And if you need help, talk to a mentor, a manager, a peer, and say, what are my areas of opportunity? You might not think you talk a lot, and everybody else is like, holy cow, let me tell you how you steamroll people. But that is the first step today, because then every day moving forward, you'll know where to put some energy and how to improve your skills.
Awesome advice. Well, in the interest of not having people have to rewind this and listen to it a second time, I'm going to attempt to summarize it for everyone that's in the car, et cetera. So in summary of everything we've learned from David Fisher today, hyper-connected selling covers the current sales landscape. There is an abundance of information in the hands of the buyer, and that is a change from how things were. Outside salespeople, to respond to this, need to become sales Sherpas. They need to be a guide for prospects to help them make better buying decisions. In the past, sales required being aggressive because buyers didn't have all the information, and you need to be aggressive to get that information in front of them. Instead, today you want to be assertive, which is putting yourself out there and putting yourself forward so that you're top of mind when they're looking for someone to reach out to. Position yourself as the go-to resource. Use today's modern tools like social media, and with this you can create multiple points of contact that prospects can reach out to you, learn from you, and you can kind of drip knowledge and information to them to be that assertive Sherpa. Provide your prospects with insights instead of just information to create true value. A lot of this is seed planting, and it'll take time to build the trust that actually leads to a sale. Human-to-human selling is all about addressing people as human beings and addressing their needs. Bring in human connections that really you just can't replicate with technology. No matter how we try, we can't replicate human connections. And as a result, sales as a career path isn't going anywhere, at least in my opinion, and in David's as well. Develop human-to-human selling by valuing empathy and with mindfulness. Sales managers can work on debriefing sales reps after a sale that didn't go to plan and or didn't go as according to what you had hoped, to understand where improvements could be made and develop those human-to-human selling skills like empathy. And even if your sales, not even with your sales manager, but even an individual rep can sit down and if something didn't go the way they planned, they can ask themselves, you know, what did that person really want? What was really driving them on a personal level, on an individual level, on a business level? Really empathize, put yourself in their shoes. Customers are already so overwhelmed with so many buying decisions. And as a salesperson, you can create more value than you need to create more value than the amount a prospect will pay for your product or service. And that's how you get things done, by showing them how value will be created and really getting them to trust you and believe you around that. Lastly, outside salespeople can supercharge their network by using tools like LinkedIn. Using social media and other channels of communication is a great way to keep in contact and remain top of mind for your prospects and customers. David, I've really enjoyed all of this information and knowledge that you've bestowed upon us in this episode. Where can our listeners read more about your work? How do they reach out to you? What do you do in your day job that's useful or interesting to these guys?
Sure. A great place to start is on my website, davidjpfisher.com/podcast/outsidesalestalk. So that's a landing page just for all of you. I've got some resources you can download about how to start supercharging your network, seed planting, all of that great stuff. You can also find me online, LinkedIn. I mentioned a couple of times. I'm at linkedin.com/in/imdfish, and also on Twitter at dfishrockstar. All of my books are available on Amazon. And hey, if you'd like to have me come out, work directly with your team, with your sales reps, I am a speaker, do a lot of sales kickoffs, internal trainings, and sales coachings for teams and individuals.
Well, that sounds great. I really appreciate that, David. This has been a fantastic episode of the Outside Sales Talk. If anyone out there can think of any other sales reps who would benefit from learning about the stuff that David shared with us today, feel free to share the love and forward this episode on to them. Take care until next time.